This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The father of the Turkish-American activist killed by Israeli soldiers in the occupied West Bank last week, welcomed on Thursday Turkey's decision to initiate an independent investigation into her death and called on the United States to do the same. VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadakaswar.
Turkey blames Israel and announced its own probe into the death of Ayşenur Eşge Egi, a Turkish-American activist who was killed by Israeli forces last week while protesting settlements in the occupied West Bank.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
We will take every legal step to ensure that the blood of our Ayşenur Eşge Egi does not remain on the ground.
Israel's campaign in Gaza has continued for 11 months despite U.S. pressure for parties to reach a ceasefire in return for the release of hostages held by Hamas. Patsy Wadakaswar, VOA News at the White House.
United States Speaker of the House Mike Johnson has found himself at a crossroads in regards to keeping the U.S. government funded. VOA's Christina Benenti.
A senior House Republican urged his party on Thursday to begin negotiations with Democrats on government funding beyond the September 30th deadline. This comes after Speaker Mike Johnson canceled a vote on a bill to extend funding until March 2025, which included a citizenship proof requirement for voter registration. Democrats and moderate Republicans opposed it, the former arguing the measure was unnecessary since non-citizens are already barred from voting in federal elections. Democratic House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries told reporters on Thursday that he had a brief conversation with Johnson the day before about finding a path forward, but declined to share details. Christina Menenti, VOA News.
North Korea has offered a rare glimpse into a secretive facility to produce nuclear weapons and materials, as it says leader Kim Jong-un visited the area and called for stronger efforts to increase his nuclear weapons. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is wrapping up a three-nation Ukraine-focused European tour in Poland after hearing repeated appeals from Ukrainian officials to use Western-supplied weaponry for long-range strikes inside Russia. Blinken traveled to Warsaw on Thursday after spending a day in Kyiv with British Foreign Ministry or Foreign Secretary David Lammy, during which they pledged to bring the Ukrainian request to their leaders. President Joe Biden and British Prime Minister Keir Starmer are to meet in the United States on Friday amid signs both Washington and London are growing more receptive to allowing the Ukrainians to use their arms to hit targets farther inside Russia than previously okayed. NATO member Poland, which shares a border with Ukraine, has been supportive of the Ukrainians' request. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reports there was a flurry of bills concerning China passed by the U.S. House this week.
The efforts would ban Chinese-made drones, limit China-linked biotech companies from access to U.S. markets, strengthen sanctions, and deepen ties with Asian countries. The campaign to target Beijing this week shows how curbing China's power has emerged as a rare issue of political consensus. Some measures did pass along party lines, with Republicans arguing the need to protect national security, Democrats raising concerns about discrimination. One contentious measure seeks to revive a Trump-era program to root out Beijing's spying in American universities and institutes. All of those bills do still need Senate approval. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris campaigned in a swing state Thursday and called for another debate with former U.S. President Donald Trump. AP correspondent Sagar Magani.
At a North Carolina rally, Harris noted this week's debate with Donald Trump.
And I believe we owe it to the voters to have another debate.
Minutes earlier, Trump rejected another matchup, writing on social media, there will be no third debate after this week's and his June showdown with President Biden. Trump suggests a prize fighter who loses a bout is always the one calling for a rematch. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Nearly 200 people have died in Vietnam in the aftermath of Typhoon Yagi, and 128 remain missing as flash floods and landslides take their toll. Vietnam's VNE Express newspaper reported Thursday that 199 people have died while more than 800 have been injured. In the capital, floodwaters from the Red River receded slightly, but many areas were still inundated with water neck high in some places. The death toll spiked earlier in the week as a flash flood swept away the entire hamlet of Lang Nu in northern Vietnam's Lao Cai province through Tuesday. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voice of America, I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, September 13, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. proposes two new permanent seats on the U.S. Security Council for Africa.
We have seen how African leadership not only benefits the lives of Africans, but people across the globe. So now it's time for African leadership to have a permanent place on the Security Council, too.
We'll have analysis of the proposal. A new report says if the Islamic State Somalia branch becomes a financial hub, its leader may become overall chief of the Islamic State for Africa. Kenyan President William Ruto visits Germany. Senegalese President Bassirou Diomaye Faye dissolves the National Assembly and calls for new legislative elections on November 17.
Because the majority at the parliament is not in his favor, he has arguments to get a parliament that accepts the agenda that he wants to put forward to resolve the Senegalese problem.
And as the gender gap among voters widens, will women push Kamala Harris to victory in the U.S. election? Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley Sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United States has proposed two new permanent seats on the UN Security Council for Africa, but as the French news agency reports, the new African seats will not have veto power over council resolutions. The announcement was made Thursday by U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, while speaking at the Council on Foreign Relations, a Washington-based think tank.
Today, I'm announcing the United States supports three additional changes to the Security Council. First, I want to start with Africa. As it stands, there are currently three non-permanent seats on the Security Council allocated to African countries on a rotating basis for 2 years. The problem is these elected seats don't enable African countries to deliver the full benefit of their knowledge and voices to the work of the Council, to consistently lead on the challenges that affect all of us and disproportionately affect Africa. That is why, in addition to non-permanent memberships for African countries, the United States supports creating two permanent seats for Africa on the Council. It's what our African partners seek, and we believe this is what is just. From Kenya's contribution to the multilateral security support mission in Haiti to Gabon's support to protect our planet, we have seen how African leadership not only benefits the lives of Africans, but people across the globe. So now it's time for African leadership to have a permanent place on the Security Council, too. Much of the conversation around Security Council reform has been just that. It's a conversation. We sit around the table every year, and as one of my colleagues said, we just give the same speech over and over and over again. And so many of these countries I've talked to, spanning vastly different approaches and opinions, agree that it's time to stop talking in circles, stop repeating what we've said year in and year out, and take action, to actually put down our principles on paper and begin the process of getting a resolution over the finish line. I'm an optimist, though, and I'm also a realist. And the reality is this: no amount of conversations will ever get us to a place of total consensus on this issue. The good news is we've been here before. And so my final announcement is that the United States supports engaging in text-based negotiations on council reform. It means we're ready to work with other countries to negotiate language, prepare amendments, and ready this resolution for a vote in the General Assembly and ultimately amend the UN Charter.
That was U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, speaking Thursday at the Council on Foreign Relations, a Washington-based think tank. The United States has proposed two new permanent seats on the UN Security Council for Africa. Kweku Nuama is a professor in the School of International Service at American University in Washington, D.C. He tells me that he is not sure if Africa would accept the U.S. offer, considering that Africa has been asking for two permanent seats with a veto, which is not included in the U.S. offer.
It is exactly what we thought she was going to propose, which is the two
permanency, but without the veto. And I don't know whether that is acceptable to Africa, because Africa has been demanding two seats with the veto. And then Africa also wants its three rotating member seats increased to five. And I don't know whether Africa is going to get all of that. But I still think that it's a beginning, not an end. And Africa can accept this and push for more. But that would require Africa to work with the other members, the Chinese and maybe Russia, to see if they can come to some type of agreement. I don't think the veto is on the table, but what Africa could do is request more permanent seats, which can then be allocated either to the regional economic communities or come up with some type of formula that doesn't have one country or the permanent countries holding it forever. But you could have a deal where, for example, we elect countries to go in for 5 years or even 10 years, and then it shifts to another country. And so we can work out those formulas in place. But we need more representation. The United Nations has to allow this to happen because it is losing legitimacy.
Well, Professor, do you think this time around the United States is serious? Because as the ambassador said, the United States is willing to work hard. As she said, it will take a lot of negotiations. So do you think this time around the United States is willing to work hard?
Well, the United States has to at least try, because the United States is competing with Russia and China for influence in Africa. So it has to come to the table with something. And this is the offer that they are making. The Chinese also have to step up and tell Africa how it is going to help us. The Russians, too, have to step up and make an offer. But the United States, if it wants to get this done, it can do it. The question is whether there's a political will to do it. There's an election coming that may change the calculus. But if the United States wants to get this done, it can be done. There's nothing written in stone at the United Nations. There's been so many changes. So if you are willing to do the work, I think that with the Chinese on the horizon and the Russians on the horizon, this becomes a priority for the United States.
Kweku Nuama is a professor in the School of International Service at American University here in Washington, D.C. Senegalese President Bassirou Diomaye Faye has dissolved the opposition-led National Assembly and called for new legislative elections on November 17. The French news agency reports that government programs had been hampered by the lack of a majority in parliament for Faye's party. Senegalese political analyst Ibrahima Khan tells me that President Faye has the constitutional right to dissolve the legislature.
The president has the constitutional right to dissolve the parliament. And because the majority at the parliament is not in his favor, he has arguments to really try to get a parliament that accepts the agenda that he wants to put forward to resolve the Senegalese problem. But the one problem is that last week, the president adopted a decree. And in that decree, he announced that the prime minister was going tomorrow to present at the parliament the policy that he wants his government to implement, and which is a constitutional obligation of the prime minister every time a new prime minister is nominated. But now, with the decision to dissolve the parliament, that presentation cannot be made. At the same time, the president is also contradicting himself.
Now he has scheduled, elections for November 17. So how likely that he will regain majority in parliament?
Yes, but that's any decision to dissolve a parliament. Maybe he knows many things that we, you and me, don't know. But I have to say that the dissolution of the parliament happens in a period where the former ruling party is divided. The former prime minister just decided the day before yesterday to create his new party. Other political parties and coalitions since the presidential election are not really showing what they can do. The only thing that we can say is that the Parti Socialiste, who was the first ruling party in the country in the 60s, and lastly, I'm not quite sure that the current presidential party is ready enough. It was dissolved by Macky Sall. All the structures of the party were dismantled. And now that they came back in 4 months, is it a machine that is capable of going into a campaign and get the majority of MPs. It's a question mark so far.
Ibrahima Khan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 13. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. President William Ruto left Kenya on Thursday evening for a two-day official visit to Germany aimed at strengthening bilateral relations between the two nations. Local media, citing State House spokesperson Hussein Mohammed, said the president's visit will feature high-level engagements, including the signing of the Kenya-Germany Agreement on Comprehensive Migration and Mobility Partnership. Political analyst David Monda tells VOA's Douglas Mpuga that the visit is a very important one.
It's very important because Germany and Kenya have had very close diplomatic relationships. Germany is Kenya's largest trading partner within the East African community. Kenya is a key conduit and avenue to the rest of the East and Central African region for German goods and services. A lot of major German multinationals, whether it's Bayer, whether it's Cooks, whether it's, you know, Mercedes-Benz, a lot of their pharmaceutical companies are based in Nairobi. And, of course, Nairobi is a major diplomatic center, being the center for the United Nations Environmental Program, for the habitat. And both Germany and Kenya are NATO allies. Germany being a strategic central founding member of NATO and Kenya being a non-NATO ally. So there are a lot of areas of cooperation that the two countries can build on with this trip.
Talking of areas of cooperation, one that's being highlighted is the employment opportunities for the youth and enhanced educational and vocational opportunities. Many Kenyans have been anticipating this to go through. Do you think they can pull it off?
I think they can definitely pull it off, and particularly with the government's drive to look for alternative sources of employment for Kenyans. Although this has been very controversial even in Kenya itself, because there's some critics of this program who say that the government should really be generating jobs in Kenya, not trying to find ways to send its best human capital abroad. But even having said that, I think this is an important conduit for labor migration and regularized labor migration. So people are moving from the global south, in this context, a developing country like Kenya, to industrialized countries like Germany. That there's formal agreements that when Kenyans are going to Germany, they have contracts, they have, you know, their labor rights are protected, you know, their human rights protected, wage issues, and so on and so forth. But the Germany also gets to, because it's a huge economy, its population is shrinking, it needs young people to work. And the German economy is the largest economy in Europe, so they are expanding, so they need this labor. So I think it's a win-win for both countries. But like I said, there is that hanging critique of the government that maybe it should also be focusing on expanding the economy locally so Kenyans are not forced to have to go to foreign countries to find work.
That was David Morda, a professor of political science at the City University of New York. He spoke from New York with VOA's Douglas Mpuga. The International Crisis Group says Islamic State in Somalia has become an important financial influence for terrorism. A report suggests the leader of the IS Somalia branch might become the new overall head of the militant group as IS seeks to expand its operations in Africa. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Islamic State in Somalia may not be as active on the battlefield as its local counterparts, the Al-Qaeda-linked terror group Al-Shabaab, which controls large parts of southern and central Somalia. However, the International Crisis Group says in a report released Thursday, IS Somalia is building relations with other ICE branches and is able to disperse money to finance terror operations in other African countries. Omar Mahmoud is a senior researcher with the International Crisis Group. He says that IS Somalia plays a bigger role externally than Al-Shabaab.
Al-Shabaab's by far and away the bigger threat. But at the same time, Islamic State Somalia has one, it's persisted despite some significant odds against it, and two, it's carved out a role for itself within the wider Islamic State network, particularly when it comes to serving as a financial hub between some of the affiliates and other parts of the Islamic State.
The International Crisis Group says Islamic State restructured its African operations in 2020, placing affiliates from the Democratic Republic of Congo and Mozambique under the watch of ICE headquarters in Somalia's Puntland region. IS Somalia is reported to have between 100 and 400 fighters stationed in the northern part of the country. According to the ICG, about half of the fighters are believed to be foreigners. Early this year, Puntland authorities arrested six Islamic State members who were Moroccans, who were later deported. According to the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, since May of this year, the group has been increasingly active and has waged several attacks against security forces and business centers. IS Somalia has also increased its activities in the port city of Bosaso and its surroundings, carrying out an extortion racket which it uses to support its fighters and activities. Richard Tuta, Kenyan counterterrorism expert, says Somalia's lack of a strong central government has enabled Somalia to be a financial hub of the IS group.
Somalia, the mentioned countries, does not have strong institutions, so it is very easy for such institutions to be compromised.
In May, the U.S. carried out airstrikes in Somalia targeting IS leader Abdul Qadir Mumin. Mumin survived. The ICG calls for cooperation between the Somali government in Mogadishu and Puntland regional authorities to tackle IS Somalia and urges outside actors to pay closer attention to the group's activities. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
A U.S. presidential race between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump remains tight, but Harris has opened a sizable lead over Trump among one group of voters, women who vote at higher rates than men. As VOA's Dora McQuarrie reports, Harris's late entry into the race widened the political party's gender gap.
Since 1984, more women than men have voted in U.S. presidential elections. And, for the most part, more of them vote for Democrats than vote for Republicans. Vice President Kamala Harris's sudden entry into the race, following President Joe Biden's July withdrawal, appears to have fired up this voting bloc. Erin Covey is with the Cook Political Report.
We have seen a pretty significant shift across a lot of different demographics, but with women in particular, who are now much more likely to vote for the Democrat at the top of the ticket than they were when it was Biden.
This election year, roughly one in five women say abortion rights is their key issue. In 2022, Supreme Court justices nominated by then-President Donald Trump helped eliminate constitutional rights to an abortion. Trump wants each state to decide abortion laws. Harris wants federal legislation to protect reproductive freedom nationwide. That is why these voters say they're backing Harris.
She's trying to create a world where people all have their rights to their own decisions, their bodies, their choices, women's rights.
She's for the people, which is the middle class, which I am middle class, and the laws about women's rights.
Among female voters, the latest poll suggests that Harris leads Trump by anywhere from 9 to 13 points, says pollster Paul Maslin.
She gained a lot of younger women who, independents, nonpartisan voters under the age of 50, many of them under 40, who really got excited by her candidacy.
Here's Erin Covey.
Black women are a lot more likely to vote for Harris now, Hispanic women. So, you know, as we've seen her do better with a lot of these specific racial demographics or educational demographics, we have seen with women, that is really where that shift is coming from.
Male voters favor Trump by anywhere from 5 to 9 points, depending on the poll. These Trump supporters are from Georgia and Montana.
First, her being the candidate is like horrific to me because, first of all, she's not prepared to be president.
For months, we would barely ever see Joe Biden, and all of a sudden, Kamala Harris is the nominee for the Democratic Party when she was never nominated in the first place. She came out of nowhere.
The gender gap persists among young voters in Gen Z, where a majority of men under the age of 27 favor Trump, according to pollster David McLennan.
There has been an increase in terms of the admiration of some Gen Z young men for, you know, swagger. It's very much a macho punch him in the face kind of thing.
McLennan says young men are politically socialized by online sources, where they often see and hear unflattering opinions about female leaders.
So they believe that women can't make the tough decisions. If the United States were to go to war or face international crisis, they don't believe that women have the ability to make the tough call.
White women were key to Trump's victory in 2016. He also won a majority of white women in 2020. In this race, the latest polls show Harris and Trump statistically tied among white women. Dora McQuar, VOA News, Washington.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the CAF Champions League. The CAF Champions League second preliminary round matches will return this weekend, with several matches scheduled to be played across various venues on the continent. Reigning Kenyan champions Gor Mahia will highly rely on home advantage in their first leg match against Egyptian giants Al Ahly on Sunday at the Nyayo National Stadium. Leonardo Nivea wants his charges to go all out and claim victory, and is confident that Gor Mahia can use home advantage to spring a surprise on their visitors.
We should push ourselves, you know, to try maintain the high level of football, to be able to play against them over here. That's why you should play over here very, very well.
In Nigeria, Rangers International of Enugu will take on Angolan side Sagrada Esperanca at the Gospel Akpabio International Stadium in Uyo on Friday. Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa will play their scheduled away match against Mbabane Swallows of Eswatini in familiar territory of the Lucas Moripe Stadium on Saturday evening. The second leg will be played still in South Africa at the Loftus Versfield Stadium the following weekend. Sundowns coach Manuka Mngiti is great that his team will play both legs of the CAF Champions League second preliminary round at home.
And if we were supposed to be traveling tomorrow or maybe traveling today to Swaziland, it could have been even more difficult for us. But the fact that the game is played locally gives us a little bit of a chance to have our players, and also maybe for them to take part in our matchday minus one training without much issues.
In athletics, South Africa's 800 meters rising star Prudence Sekodizo will line up for the Wanda Diamond League final on Friday night in Brussels. Sekodizo cut through to the final of the two-lap contest after she clinched the first place in the two Diamond League races, first in Marrakesh, Morocco, an award leading time of 1 minute 57.26 seconds, and then in Oslo, Norway, running 1 minute 58.66 seconds. In cycling news, the third edition of the Jubilee Life Free Cycling Race, powered by Grand Nairobi Bike Race, has been scheduled for Sunday, the 29th of September. The Jubilee Life Free Race will feature 6 thrilling categories. The Internamia cycling event will bring together up to 2,500 elite cyclists from 21 countries, including Ethiopia, Eritrea, USA, France, and the East African community, for an intense and adrenaline-fueled competition. In basketball, 4 teams are set to battle for a final berth at the ongoing Under-18 Women's Afro Basket in South Africa, with 2 regulars, a debutant, and a second returning for the first time in over a decade involved. And that does it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, September 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.